on, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inside the Game. I'm DJ Weed, joined as always by Check 6 Pain user EG Idra and EG In Control. This is episode 46 on July 10th, 2012. Of course, Inside the Game brought to you by SteelSeries, Monster Energy, and Kingston HyperX. And guys, this is normally the point in the show where I ask everyone to raise their hands up in the air. I want to see those fingers. I want to make sure that everyone is safe this 4th of July, that we're not missing any digits. Actually, you guys are out of the country. We know you're okay. But pain user, there you go. Okay. Everyone's safe. We made it through another 4th, celebrating this fine country from defending itself from aliens. Thank you, Will Smith.
God, you actually, yeah.
For all the work, you know, that he did for our country.
Damn redcoat aliens, man.
And obviously given us that
welcome to Earth. What did he say? And he punches it.
He's like, welcome to Earth, motherfucker, wasn't it?
He does. Or is it just, is it though, bitch? Is it just bitch?
Is it just... Might be bitch. It might be
welcome
the one
to
bitch
Earth,
in the game.
Bitch.
Yeah. It was well delivered though in his
It was well delivered. In a way that only the Fresh Prince could actually deliver it.
Like wraps up like a 10,000-pound alien and drags him to Area 13 with a parachute.
I like that movie. That movie's great.
Oh, it was fun.
Independence Day when they blow up everything and everyone's running and shit, so good.
That's always the best part of every disaster movie, man. You know, like just can we just get to the 20 minutes of shit blowing up and stuff falling down and, you know, running away from a giant crevice in the earth in a limousine? Like, that's the stuff that we look for. You guys see
one of my favorite memes of all time came from that movie, too. The one where it didn't live very long, but Ian Goldberg or whatever his name is, right?
Yeah.
The one where he, like, basically attaches random ideas and then comes together with something. He's like, cold outside, cold isn't virus, bicycle isn't two wheels, two earths, two planets, alien spaceship, like, you know, like, oh, Goldblum, yeah.
Yeah.
I like that, but then it ends with a fucking hick driving his plane into apparently the weakest spot of the fleet, which is kind of silly.
And that's why we celebrate Independence Day. One day those Europeans will figure it out. I had to tell Apollo that story. He didn't understand why. and so, cleared that
and
up.
And so it was born.
And we cleared that up. So, guys, what's up? Of course, you guys just get back from Deutschland, like, what, yesterday?
Late yesterday.
Yesterday is, and we got in the home at 12 a.m. today.
Yeah. We crawled into our beds at about 12 a.m.
Pretty much.
You're live. You seemed peppy today in your email, so I imagine that just means you haven't slept yet and you're just powering through it.
No, I slept. I was wide awake at 7 a.m. Did you do that, Greg?
Yep. No, I was up at like 6 and I tried to sleep for 2 more hours and gave in.
Well, guys, we get to jump right into it. I mean, unfortunately for myself and Pain User, we lived Helm Story Cup this weekend, along with pretty much everyone else watching the show. Via the stream, as we watched you guys play and commentate and eat Korean barbecue and go to the pub and eat some more great looking hamburgers. And in fact, the food might have been the part that made me the most jealous every single time. It's be like, okay, guys, one more game and then Korean barbecue. So,
and then like the casters in between games are like, God, when's this game going to end? Oh, that smells so good. Oh, do you smell that? What is that? Is that a meat pie?
So put the crazy megaphone down. Just use your microphone for now.
Dude, your did it
just turn up a lot?
Yeah, it's still really loud.
It just randomly turns up really loud sometimes. I don't know why.
Maybe you have that Skype setting that's auto-adjust audio. It should just say, like, do you want the devil to fucking insert itself into your brain.
All right, hold on. Let me get this fixed.
That already sounds much better, man.
It's better now.
Do you have any of the potato salad?
Yeah. No, I don't really like potatoes.
The best food they were serving there was actually their potato salad.
I don't know. That chili was pretty amazing.
It's good. Mostly meat.
It was all good. Yeah.
You guys are right, though. Their food is good. It's really cool that they do that. Like, there is stuff around, so they could have gotten away with, and people wouldn't be like, this is the worst thing ever, where they're just like, yeah, there's food around, go to restaurants and stuff. Like, people would have been able to do that for themselves. But the fact that Home Story Cup makes it their business to basically hire a cook and have him feed us three times a day. It's pretty damn cool. It's pretty awesome. And you know what? It's not like we hold that against other terms, because certainly
God
fucking MLG is like,
it.
Get in line. There is 7,000 of you. Like,
there's, you know, there's like riot cops on the side there. That's not going to work. But at Home Story Cup, it's small and intimate enough where they can do that, and then they do that. So I think that's really cool.
I mean,
it's
in
a
retrospect,
really nice, fun touch, yeah.
In retrospect, like, I think of all the events I've gone to where sometimes I just don't eat. Like, sometimes it's just easier not to eat because you never know what you're getting, or you just don't have enough time, or, you know, you don't know how that stuff's going to sit. And so it is quite amazing to see you guys literally just, here you go, take this 5 pounds of meat and shove it into your mouth and be happy. You know, it's it does make it a different atmosphere. I think people are generally a little bit happier because of that. But obviously, the food is one thing. But
the coolest part is the intimate atmosphere with the players, I think. Getting to see players commentate and play and, like, having their thoughts in between matches and stuff. And then you've got MC, which just makes everything great.
One of the reasons why I love Home Story Cup is because I don't think you get to see a public display of casters arguing more than any other place ever.
Ever. Oh,
and the more that you added, the more frequent that the arguments became. And you know, this was always the case in previous Home Story Cups, but it was you know, people, the casters / players were definitely like, they were going to tea. It was some great stuff. So
Cloud and Tarson take the cake for sure. that was the best I've ever seen.
I don't know, man. There's Destiny Rotterdam. There's like Rotterdam plus anybody else, basically, and then there. I mean, it's just funny that that's the only potential negative of having pro gamers commentate is like one guy will be like, "Well, I don't know, six stalkers can't do too much damage here," and then the next guy will be like, "Are you fucking kidding? Of course they're gonna do a ton of damage." And then like they don't just like do the professional caster thing where they're like, "Ah, ha, ha, you're probably right. Back to the game." They're like, "No, actually." And then, like, when it happens, there's the little passive aggressive comments that you have after. That was so good.
Oh, hell,
like,
most of the time it wasn't passive aggressive. It was just flat out, "You were fucking retarded there."
Yeah. There was one time I tuned in to Destiny casting, and I actually thought when I first was watching that, like, maybe he was trolling. I thought for a second, I was like, dude, Destiny's totally trolling in his caster. But he was just, like, into the game. Like, you know, casting full on. But, I mean, it was just, like, good stuff from anyone. Everyone that went on there, I always knew that it was going to be a good broadcast. Of course, you guys also cast it as well. But before we go on to that, let's talk about the fact that you guys were playing there as well. And not only is it a relaxed tournament, you get food, you know, you get to cast a little bit. But in terms of playing, the schedule, at least from an outside perspective, seems to be pretty chill. Can you guys give us kind of a breakdown of, you know, what it's like to play?
I think one of the only places you could find pretty legitimate criticism against Home Story Cup that as they move forward they need to do a better job of is a couple things. The computers had some frame rate issues. A couple like the Metropolis version was really taxing some computers, which hurt some people. Sauce in particular was complaining about that. There wasn't like disconnects and there wasn't closures of computers, so it wasn't really catastrophic, but there were issues that don't arise at other tournaments that have, I think, just better computers or something like that. And then as far as schedule goes, there'd be, like, Sheth was complaining about this to me too, as well as others, but they'd play no matches for 2.5 hours, and then they'd play all four of their matches right in a row, which is a little bit extreme. But it was like, I mean, like, what you do to improve that is probably just have players play intermittently or at a set time so they don't have to wait all day. Like, once the computers start getting taken up, you don't have any time to warm up anymore because there's other people using those for the groups. So there's some times where you, like, warm up for 2 hours and then they're like, okay, get off the computer, we need to use it now. And you can play at 7:30 p.m., which is, you know, only in 8 hours or something like that. So little things like that. But for the most part, because
from
they're
an
all
enjoying
friends,
yourself, but from an enjoying yourself perspective, there's things to do when you're not playing. But then you just kind of like just hammer out your games.
Yeah, so once you start,
well, it's
once
not a question starts, of like enjoying yourself. It's just competition.
Yeah, once your group starts, you play all of your games immediately, and there weren't enough computers for everyone to warm up. Especially if some matches from the last set of groups ran late, then there wouldn't even be enough for everyone who was about to play to warm up. So they would end up doing things where they had to split, like you get to warm up for 20 minutes and the other person gets to warm up, and then you have to both play immediately after that. So that was kind of uncomfortable. But since it is all being hosted in Tick's apartment, there's a very, very finite space for computers. Like, they can only have so many people playing at any one time. And so the only other thing is to, like, move the venue, which kind of takes away from it, because part of the fun is that it's at his apartment, or invite less players or something, which still not as good.
I think I asked this before, too, but do you guys, are you guys all sleeping there as well?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There's, like, some of us stay at this hostel/hotel called the ETAP, which is, like, a seven-minute walk away. And then there's a few other hotels a little bit further away, so some people were kind of either long-walking it or, like, cabbing or something like that. And then there's, like,
just a bunch of
half the term is German, so they just kind of go there, too.
A bunch of gamers just, like, sprawled out under all the computers and hallways and whatnot.
His staff is mostly sleeping there.
Yeah.
So all the Koreans. Guys, all the couches are taken up and people on floors and stuff.
The Koreans all get to sleep with the SK manager at the SK manager's house. It's actually, like, an hour away. It's kind of silly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the groups. Idra, you had in Group B pretty good, great showing. 3-0, 6-1 in games. I believe on the first day it was A, B, C, and D, just the four groups, right? Yeah, that's what it looks like. Oops. And then, of course, E, F, G, and H were played the next day, went into the next one. How were groups? Let's talk about your guys' groups specifically. Inter, you, of course, had Bling, Bly, and Cloud.
Well, opening of 3-0 was obviously really good. Not the best opponents, but still really good. Bling, Cloud, Bly, they're all people who can win stuff online. They're, like, not the top-tier foreigners, but probably pretty close below that. So open 3-0 is good. I got a little lucky in a few of the games. Cloud made a lot of mistakes on Daybreak after killing my third. But he just left his army out there, and I was able to take advantage of all the mistakes he made, which is a pretty big part of competition anyway. Then Bling, he pretty much had me beat with that really... I'm not sure if he got to show it against any other Zergs, but he has a really cool timing worked out. It's great anti-Broodlord timing, and the composition itself just rolls ultra, so it's pretty hard to deal with. And he was in the process of rolling me, but then he accidentally moved command his entire army and got surrounded by Lings. So that kind of gave it back to me. But overall, I played well. I was pretty happy with that. And so yeah, the first day was good at least.
On immediately following year 3-0 of the group, there was sort of this this interesting reaction that took place on Reddit, and I'm not sure if you were even aware of it, but
I heard about it. I haven't seen it.
It was kind of like a combination of people who were like, you know, Greg Fields is back, like the fucking sea is parting, and like white doves are after he GGs or going up behind him. I don't know. And then there's the other half that's like, hey, let's wait until the next group and let's see how he does. But anyway, like a lot of back and forth. But I have to imagine that, like, you're feeling pretty good after the conclusion of Group B. Like, you know, is that a result of what you have been working on at all?
Definitely. I've took some time relatively off doing less stuff, traveling. I don't think I've traveled since Anaheim. So I had a lot of time to actually just sit and practice and work really hard. And, of course, whenever you have the opportunity to do that, level of play rises pretty significantly. I've figured out a lot of things. I was really, really comfortable going in both CVT and CVP. Still, ZVC is pretty up in the air for me. I think a lot of Zergs just like it right now. It's improving. And just as a player overall, I'm getting better, so I win more at it. But strategically, I think my understanding of that matchup's below the others. But I felt like I was playing really well going into it, and... You know, 3-0 in the first group's good, but I kind of expected that. It wasn't a super scary group. There was no Koreans and no super, super amazing foreigners. So I was mostly just looking on to the rest of the tournament at that point.
All right. In control, you were in Group C.
Mm-hmm.
You had a very rabid Happy, as it's always interesting to see him since we don't get to see him too often other than online groups. Rhett, Real, and yourself. So talk to us about that group a little bit.
I did a pretty long interview with both Catered and Take about this. They were asking me about it, but I mean, basically, the gist of it is like.
Give me the gist, buddy.
Going into the last Home Story Cup, the group was really scary. It was Thor, Zane, Sock, and Rhett. No, Nurcio, excuse me. And I looked at that group, and it was pretty easy for me to be like, okay, you know, I can give it my best shot, but all these guys are fucking amazing. Like, probably going to get destroyed here. And I didn't have too much confidence, which made it a little bit easier for me to kind of play with like a reckless abandon, so I didn't have that much pressure on me. Going into this group was a little bit different. I didn't know these guys. I've never played Happy, never played Real. Obviously, Rhett is like, I guess the term I use when I talk about it in the interview is like, he's my nemesis, but it's hard to call him a nemesis when all he does is actually beat me, and I just kind of die to him. So it's more like he's the anti-me, I guess, or something like that. It was tough because I knew that Real was a PvP specialist. I'm not wildly surprised, or not surprised, I'm not wildly impressed with his PvT or PvZ, although his 2-0 over Happy is really, really impressive and awesome. And then Happy, everyone talks about being an absolute monster, and I don't have any experience with him. I played Braddock, Straylock, and a few other of the Eastern European Terrans, but Happy actually plays completely different from them. So, I mean, at the end of the day, like, Rhett, I won't even forget about that series. He just absolutely murdered me. Like, he's in my head. I can't get pylons down outside my base. I can't do anything, so that was silly. Good series with Happy, and I won the first game against Real, which is always the worst way to lose a best of three, because it's like, you win the first game, and you're like, okay, cool, I'll just take care of business game two, and then like that one loses, and then lose three. So
yeah,
I don't have a whole lot to say other than they were good games, and they were tough guys, except for the Rhett series. That was not a good... Those weren't good games.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the, most certainly some of the big upsets that were talked about over the course of the weekend. excuse me. Notably, one coming from Group F, in which Mana was eliminated, where apparently the Zergs just ganged up on him and ended up taking him out. He ended up losing to pretty much all of them except for Destiny. And then the other one was Sasuke going 0-3 in his group versus, of course, Nurchio, Nama, Todd, Nurchio going on to win the whole thing. But I don't know, Pinyuzu, you watched all weekend. Any comments on these particular players or just in general, any of the upsets?
Destiny even also took a game off Mana, I believe. The other Zergs in the group beat him, but it was largely just small mistakes, I think, on the Protoss end, and a lot of the Zerg players were just playing really well in ZVP. Like, they had a lot of the timings figured out. And in Nurchio's case, his versus Protoss was just absolutely beautiful all weekend. He was holding all-ins like nobody I've ever seen. And he made some of MC's all-ins just look, jokingly bad. He was holding off 7-gate from MC and 8-gate from MC as well. Just picking off pylons, perfect unit composition. I was really, really impressed with Nurchio all weekend long. And then that move that he pulled towards the end where he blocked the Dark Templar off of his hatchery.
That was sick. Yeah.
Was just unreal. I mean, I think he had to mineral walk to a base on like the middle right of the map and then mineral walk back to his third and then stop like right when they were on top of the hatchery, pushing the roaches and the drones off the hatchery. I don't know exactly how he did it. I'd love somebody to actually explain that because I still don't know, but that was really, really impressive.
I mean, just kind of like shifting gears to that a little bit. At first, I thought that perhaps he thought he had killed it. I think we've all done this before. Like, we think we've killed it, and then we pull units away only to find out there's that hit left. And I thought then, no, but I mean, I haven't seen a video yet. I haven't seen anyone like post the replay or anything, but it was, I would love to see exactly how that was performed as well. Anyway, as we move on, one of the big stories about the top eight was the fact that there were zero Terrans.
And that can also be said about the TSL qualifier as well. Both semis are PVZ. And also GSL Codes, most of the, I think, except for Supernova.
They just left, too.
Okay, yeah, and Tasia. They've all been eliminated as well. Which brings us back to my point from last week.
If you look at the Terrans who went, it was fucking Happy, MVP, and MVP was playing like without his wrist again. He's just started treatment for the condition that was causing his wrist problems, so he was like crippled. I have no idea why he even went. The other Terrans were Cloud and Nama. I don't know what
they're... Oh, yeah,
just
so
like when that Terran lineup goes, it's not supposed to be successful.
Can you guys kind of talk about what happened with MVP? Because, like, I was not...
We're jumping all the fuck over.
Yeah, we are just jumping all over the place.
He's up there, pain user.
I'm curious, though. I mean, because he was just not on form all weekend long, and some of the games that he showed, like he was making mistakes that I've never seen before out of him.
No, he has actually just started the treatment for the condition. I forget whatever it is. It's like a slip disc in his neck or something like that. I don't know if he's had surgery or if it's just physical therapy, but yeah, he's just not playing well because he can't move his wrist.
Did I hear that he did go to the hospital?
I think I saw something about that. There was a thread about it on Reddit, and people were talking about it on Team Liquid.
And then people linked Nama's Twitter post where he's like, 3 times GSL champ, too easy. Oh. And then they showed the picture of MVP in the hospital at the same time.
Oh, that's actually rough. Well, you know, I want to go back really quick to the top eight and talk a little bit about this lack of Terrans, because I feel what's happening is this like fundamental universal imbalance. And it reminds me of a film that I once saw in 2004. And I'm not sure if you guys have seen this film, but it is called A Day Without a Mexican. And the film is about a fog that surrounds California and all the Mexicans disappear. And then, like, what happens when this actually occurs? And, you know, just imagine it's more
Wait, that's
like...
actually a movie?
It's actually a movie. But because right now it feels like we are living a day without a Terran, ladies and gentlemen. Like, where, even when I ladder, it's all Zerg and fucking Protoss. Like, seriously, they're becoming an endangered species right now. I don't know what's going on, man.
There's definitely still Terrans out there. It's just like, oh man, I don't know. I find the verse Zerg and verse Protoss matchups really hard now. Like, Protoss players have sort of figured out a lot of the timings, and they're all kind of adopting the turtle style, like slow, safe third, tech into Colossus, get Storm. They're also, instead of just hitting Colossus timings now, a lot of Protoss are getting both Colossus and Storm before they push out off of 3-base, so they already have the 2 most powerful tech options, I feel like. And then against Zerg, it's just like a sort of overwhelming feeling past a certain minute mark if you don't do damage, where they get onto 3 or 4 base and just start rallying ridiculous amounts of Ling Bane, Ling Muta.
So we're kind of like really all over the place. I don't even know where we...
He's taking his Ritalin. Jesus.
Where we go from here.
I don't know. I think, are we talking about top 8? Terrans,
we're talking about top 8. We're kind of talking about lack of Terrans.
I thought we were talking about the lack of Terrans.
Well, we were kind of talking about the lack of Terrans.
There's never been a huge amount of Terrans outside Korea since back like a couple months after release when Terran was super overpowered. You've always had Cass and Thorzane doing really, really well. Then you have others like Happy who do well on ladder. I know there's others from Europe who do well. Oh, DeMuslim, of course, and a handful of others. But besides that, there's never been that many, even when Terran was winning absolutely everything in Korea. And when you have players like Cass and Thorzane not go to an event, of course European Terrans are going to be underrepresented. That's like if, I know, all the good Zergs and all the good Protosses don't go, then Zerg and Protoss won't do nearly as well. If you look at the GSL, there's 2 Terrans in the top 8, like 2-3-3. You can't have a more even racial split in the top 8. And there was 7 Terrans in the top 16, I believe, which is, there were more Terrans than any other race. I don't know. People are being kind of silly and not really looking at all of the context surrounding some of these numbers.
I like that you give it to us straight, Greg.
Would you throw Beast EQT in the top Terran European faction as well?
Well, he's living in NA right now, and he often seems to kind of underperform. He's definitely really, really good. Well, really, really good period. Really, really good in practice. But he's never had great results. He's just kind of done pretty well in team leagues and stuff and occasional runs in online tournaments. And I guess all those small European cups, but it's hard to really draw conclusions from them because there's so many.
I think it'd be silly for us to say that Terrans aren't suffering right now. They certainly are. But to Greg's point, there's a couple standards that are going on. Or not standards, but conditions. Like, Terrans have actually always been the least played race throughout all of StarCraft II. Just they always have. They're... from the bottom up, the easier leagues to right up to the pros, there's always been the fewest Terrans. It's the hardest. I think it's the hardest race to play, especially managing the army with all the moving parts. But then you take that, and then with this balance change, like everyone's having a little bit of a tough time with Zerg right now. But Terrans just got done having another patch where their ghosts basically got removed from the matchup altogether. So it kind of doubled up on them. Like at the end of that patch, their win percentage was starting to go back up, and they were starting to figure out ghostless play. But then with the queen, everything the Terrans had figured out about playing without the ghost was more early game shenanigans, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And with the queen, a lot of that got shut down pretty hard. So
pretty hard.
They got right back on the back burner where they have to figure out a lot of stuff. So you already have a race that's underrepresented, and now you have a race that has to figure out new strategies because all the ones they're depending on, for the most part, aren't working. You're going to have results like this. But to Greg's point, specifically with Homestory Cup, he's absolutely right. Like, Terrans have always been very top-heavy. They don't have, like, a lot of middle-tier guys. You always have these guys that fucking win tournaments and do really well. Then you have a giant gap. Then you have everybody in Diamond and below, like, It's like Thorzane, Demuslim. Happy's always been doing really good up there. But what Terrans have gone to Korea? You know, like, what Terrans do we see other than Thorzane putting their best foot forward? Yeah,
I don't even know that I can name another one, Jeff.
So
to back up your point,
it would be really dumb to say that. I mean, we give Terrans a hard time because we talk about how, like, they whine too much and stuff like that, but things are hard for right now for them, but... show. Thank you, chat. Someone said show. And yep. Jinro.
Even show's kind of fallen off before the patch. He hasn't been... Like, back when he was winning IEM Europe Championships and whatnot, he hasn't been doing performances like that for quite a long time.
Yeah. Alright, let's finish up our chat about Homestory Cup. Of course, it takes us into the top 8. Fortunately, even though we had so many Protoss and so many Zergs, we only saw one mirror match through the entire quarterfinals, which was best of 5. Now, you guys both commentated this. That had to have been kind of interesting. Did you commentate any on the last day?
Which match are you referring to?
The whole quarterfinals into the playoffs.
Yeah, I did Slivko versus Golden, and then the third, fourth match between Golden and MC. For the final day.
And then obviously, Jeff, you coming in. Good combination with all these PBZs. But, throughout the competition, what I really want to ask you two guys is in relation. You mentioned a little bit, Greg, when you were talking, or I think it was actually Pinyas, to talk a little bit about Nurcio. But can you give us a breakdown of kind of like even what you guys are seeing in the, call it what you will, but the Homestory Cup metagame of Protoss versus Zerg and how that broke down? Because it was actually 50-50 going into the semifinals. And, of course, in the finals, Nurcio just kind of made it look easy. But overall, you might want to make a comment on that.
Nurcio played ridiculously well overall. His Infestor usage, like a lot of the pros were talking about, even while we were casting, but then just watching his games, everyone agreed that he has some of the best Infestor uses versus Protoss that we've ever seen. He chains his fungals perfectly. He always, Jeff actually mentioned something yesterday, he always moves in a little bit more. Generally, you just try and hit right from the edge, keep your Infestors alive, and keep them rooted there. But he moves in a little bit further and actually gets the full radius of fungal off on the Protoss army, so he gets way more DPS. And he chains them perfectly. The timing is always exactly right. Yeah, so it was really good decision-making on Infested Terrans versus Fungal, like which spell to use and what ratio of mana to use on them. So that just makes him much, much better versus timings than a lot of other Zergs. And going into this tournament, we saw a lot of Protosses trying 3-base timings before, to hit before Broodlord. They weren't really aiming for the late game, which just plays perfectly into him because that's what he was really, really good at stopping. Good decision-making, fast Broodlords, good Infester usage. And just overall, he played really solid.
One thing I noticed about Nurcio that you kind of see Rhett do a lot is the focus on the furthest most forward pylon. His ability to take out the pylon, the warp in pylon closest to his third or in the area that's in jeopardy, he almost always will either sacrifice a small portion of his army or just use a small portion of his army to flank around and take out that pylon, delaying the rush by an extra, you know, minute and a half, and I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, he doesn't skimp, and he does things right. Like when he pokes and prods with his roach army, a lot of times we see Zerg players get 15, 10 roaches segmented off and destroyed for free. That almost never happened to him. Like Taylor was saying, he always went after the pylons, but I also noticed like when a warp prism is hanging over his head, even a great Zerg like Damaga has lost really important games to a player like Mana where he's destroying the Protoss army, but because a Warp Prism drops 4 Zealots in his main mineral line, all of a sudden he's he's in trouble. He's lost drones, or he's, you know, not mining from an entire base and not injecting there as well. Whereas Nurchio will always grab five or six Roaches and just say, you guys got this warp prism now. And nothing that comes out of a warp prism is going to take on five or six Roaches cost effectively.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the Daybreak game. I forget. It might have been versus Jungle in the finals. I'm not entirely sure, but a Daybreak game CVP. He actually left seven Roaches in his main to wait for a patrolling warp prism. And that's 14 supply. Most Zergs won't do that. It feels like that takes too much away from your army that you're not supposed to do that. But then, like Jeff said, that saves that base. That's worth quite a bit. So he never underreacted to stuff. That's why he was so good at holding off cheeses all throughout. Then plus dealing with harass.
And like Taylor said, too, his anti-cheese actually. Unreal. I don't know. You know what's funny too is when you watch him, you're not like overwhelmed by something revolutionary that he's doing. It's not like some weird strat that no one's seen. He just kind of covers his bases. He had the overlords in the right spots. He spotted most of the pylons for which his aggression was, you know, the aggression was based off of. He didn't try to push the issue too much with drones. His upgrades weren't overwhelming, but he just was in the right place at the right time, time in and time again. And he made some really cool decisions, too. Like, when he had DTs warped in his base by a pylon inside his main from MC, he actually, like, bodyguarded the spore crawler up by surrounding it with all the drones and the queens to transfuse. I thought that was really smart. That's something that's very underrated. How many times do we see a Zerg just walk a spore crawler up there and it gets picked off and it's like, well, now you're dead.
Yep.
I mean, sometimes I hate to, like, ask these types of questions because, you know, on one hand, we see a lot of stuff happen that then never really gets utilized again in the game. But we talk frequently about sort of the evolution of the game. And I've actually seen this come up into play, like, several times, I'd say over the last 3 months, where we have seen, like, Zerglings surround something or, you know, in this same sort of fashion. Do you guys feel like, especially with Nurchio saving his hatch on this game and some of the other sort of, baller shit that he did, do you think this is another sort of evolution of the game to think and to then execute these things at that level in game?
I think it's more just, like, his skill and just all-around solid play as opposed to, like, evolving Zerg play. I mean, he didn't do anything that I think Zergs would find, like, revolutionary, but his execution of everything and his overall game sense, to me anyway, is just 100% on point.
Yeah, it's short of maybe the hatchery surround block thing on Ohana. I'm not sure if that's a new tactic that I wasn't aware of before, or he was just trying to glitch the workers through and it happened to work out, or what. But that's the only thing that could really be considered revolutionary if it is
that
a new
was,
trick.
That
it was
something
amazingly,
else.
Yeah, it was just amazing. But it, like Taylor said, it's not anything revolutionary.
You know what I liked about him, though, too, is I think one thing that's actually really underrated for Zerg players in particular is that he varied his play a lot. He was doing mutas, he was doing Roach Infester, he was doing Roach Aggression into four base, kind of Stefano style. He was doing the mega late game army. I don't think we ever saw Ultralis out of him, so he didn't vary it, I guess, like across the board. But I saw a lot of different play styles from him at different times. And even on, like, he had game plans on maps. Like, Daybreak was definitely his three base, Roach Aggression into faster Hive, and then insta five base with Spine Crawlers and Broodlords in the middle. You could almost time him on that. Like, that's what he's going to do. And then Ohana, he has a strong tendency to go Mutas. But outside of that, there was a lot of variation to his play, so it kind of kept the Protoss players on their toes. And because he was so staunch and strong against cheese, we saw, like, MC come unraveled against him, and I think to a certain extent Yungwa as well, because they didn't feel like they could harass him, and they were having a tough time keeping a read of what he was doing.
Yeah, Yungwa, MC.
If you compare Yungwa's PVZs in other matches in the tournament to the finals, Nurchio was definitely at his head and had him really, really uncomfortable. He had some of the best late-game PVZ I've seen. His decision-making was perfect and whatnot in the previous matches against a bunch of other Zergs, and even kind of against Nurchio in their first match. But then going to the finals, he just looked incredibly uncomfortable. It looked like he felt he had to do something silly to win.
Absolutely. And I think another thing is his play style matches up so well against specifically a player like MC's style, who goes for those really well-executed timing pushes with, like, 7 or 8 gate. Because he's so good at repelling it. And then, like, the game where he went Mutas, for instance, and they ended up getting into the base race situation, You guys remember that game where he eliminated MC's base and killed the last probe that he was trying to get out with the warp prism?
The Mutalink game on Atlantis, yeah.
Yeah, the Mutalink game on Atlantis spaceship. That was, like, a perfect example of MC trying to go for a really heavy gateway timing and him just holding it off perfectly. And that's, like, him varying his play as well, because he switched into the Mutalink style that game, and MC hadn't seen that yet from him. He'd been seeing the Roach into Infestor style. I thought that was, like, really, really well executed by him.
That was kind of an unfortunate game for MC, because he happened to be going for fast warp prism. Forget who it was who pointed out, I think it might have been Haswabs, said that when Protoss is going fast warp prism, they don't bother to get a probe out on the map.
Nope.
Because, obviously, you have the warp prism. So he had very limited, almost non-existent scouting, and then he also didn't have a probe out already to build anything for the base race. So, kind of just a little bit of builder luck, because that muta build was pretty risky. He went up to, like, 70, 80 drones... three base, really fast muta. With, I'm not even sure if he had any spine crawlers. No Roach tech, not a lot of speedlinks, no fast speedling upgrade, etc.
Who needs spine crawlers? Yeah.
So that one in particular was a little bit risky, but just that was one of the few risks that he actually took. Sure, those two dumb 8-pool games. Overall, he just played really solid.
I'd be interested to see MC and him play again at some point, because MC even said multiple times he was just like... he said he chose very poor builds. He should have played a defensive style against Nurcio and been more greedy. And I think, but he just didn't have the chance to figure him out. And I'm sure a lot of the Koreans just don't.
It was best of five. I mean,
well, yeah. I mean, that said, but I'm sure he had like builds prepared going into that best of five, and he was just kind of cycling through the Rolodex. So.
Yeah. MC did say after that he felt he chose really poor builds against against Nurcio.
But I guarantee you, I think MC versus Nurcio. MC gets better as they go further on, because sure. Nurcio is, for all the variety I talked about, it's contained to, you know, a best of three or best of five, whereas MC is, like, literally, he says he has 100 builds PVZ, and normally I'd laugh, but I think he might be serious, so.
and Nurcio definitely follows themes, whereas MC can literally do just about anything. Nurcio will have a lot of variation within a pretty standard game plan that he has going.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I mean, MC does have so many different builds. Even, like, oh, man, he pulled one rabbit out of the hat against Sase on Daybreak.
That's where, cool.
Oh, my God. I can't believe he ended up winning that. That was just unreal. But the DT switch at the end, I was just in so much pain watching that game for Sase because I thought he had it clenched out, and then he ended up losing because he got his Observer sniped and some DTs just ended up killing everything. But that's just another example of MC, like, making a transition into DTs at a point in the game where I thought he was just completely dead and just making it work, forcing it to work almost by sniping observers and taking out the robos. It's just like ridiculously good play.
So obviously a big shout out to Nurcio for winning the event. You guys, final thoughts on just sort of your home Story Cup experience. I think it still remains a very unique and well-audienced event. It seemed that a lot of people were tuned in over the 4 days that
absolutely
that it was on, and the numbers were pretty good. And
rivaled Evo for a couple days.
Yeah. I mean, up until the finals for sure. But it was great. There's a lot of stuff to watch. But you guys, Greg, start with you. Home Story Cup 5, sort of wrap or experience.
Home Story Cup is always a super fun tournament. This is the second one I got to go to, I think. Maybe third. It's always really, really fun. Like you said, the atmosphere is just, it's so incredibly unique. You never have players in that kind of relaxed atmosphere. You never have all the players casting and just hanging out together. And everyone is so, like, we're all there in an apartment together. We don't have a lot of room. Everyone's just sitting around watching games, eating, playing poker between matches. So you never really get to interact with your peers that much outside of the smaller group that you hang around with all the mm-hmm. time. So it's a really fun, unique experience. Definitely one of the better tournaments to go to simply because of that.
It's clearly perceivable to the audience, too, which is, I think, another thing that makes it so attractive. You get an insight into the players' minds and their personalities that you just really don't get with any other tournament. And I think Home Story will continue to grow, and if they can maintain that and not get too big. And I think, to Greg's point about it being in the apartment and staying in the apartment, I think is a really good point. Because, like, if they were to move it to a bigger venue or something like that, I think inevitably it would just
you start
get
losing
too big.
Yeah.
In control?
It's a blast. I think Take does an awesome job, not only treating the players really good, but I think giving a unique product to a lot of people. I don't, you know, drawing, like, people are like, this is better than MLG, or, you know, what do I watch, this or Evo? Like, that's fine. Like, those comparisons, I can understand why, you know, people do that no matter what. But for me, I think it's pretty obvious that Homestar Cup's just always going to be completely unique. It's just different. And I don't think 10 more Homestar Cups would be a good thing. But I think the one that we do have is worth protecting and looking forward to. So I was, you know, kind of pimping their HD all weekend long. And I hope people really consider that just because it's kind of an important part of the community, just doing what they can to support that. Because it's not like Take is turning this around and buying himself a gold Cadillac or something like that. It's just actually him putting this on to make his living and doing something good for the community. So I hope a lot of people kind of see that. And for me personally, I look forward to the January one more than the summer one, because the summer one was fucking hot as balls. There's like 45 people in that apartment with computers, you know, like 20 computers on.
Plus all the camera lights and all that.
Cameras, lights, it's really hot. It was actually like a little oven. So for us big guys out there, the tournament was a little bit hard in that way. But outside of that, it was great.
Yeah, every time people finish their matches, they'd just be like, stand up and kind of walk around and get some air.
I'd kind of like to reiterate what Jeff said about the HD Pass. Obviously, this event's done, but for the next one, or if there's anything on the VODs or whatever, people should really consider that, because this isn't a big corporate thing. Take himself actually split away from ESL. I'm not sure if this is solely Take's thing or if it's still partially involved with that, because there was a lot of ESL staff there. So I don't know how that all works, but he's not really, like, it's not branding it like an MLG. He can't get gigantic sponsors that a lot of these tournament series have, because it is such a unique, relatively small, relatively uncommon thing. So if you really want to support a tournament, this is a pretty good choice for that.
Yep.
It's work. Thank you guys for your comments. I mean, as a spectator, I absolutely loved it. They added a few additional streams this year as well. Had the HD, like you guys mentioned, which was kind of nice for the chill and relaxed chat. So I want to say thanks to all you guys out there that were in chat, because that was kind of nice and enjoyable. For once, having a chat where everyone isn't a fucking top one GM. Great. I like it a lot. Sorry, I was just seeing that article that you guys were mentioning before the show that says Boxer talks about rehab, returning to pro gaming, and retirement.
Never to drink again.
Yeah.
Time to plug Monster.
It's like, speaking of rehab.
See, I got
grab
you guys.
Yourself. Look at that. Look at that.
Attaboy, Greg.
Hmm?
Attaboy.
Attaboy. You talk a little bit about the NASL. That's this weekend, Season 3, Top 8, leaving. In fact, doing something that MLG is yet to do, leaving the United States and heading to Canada. We all know pretty much what to expect at NASL, but like the biggest question I got to ask you guys is, like, can you even think of the last big Canadian event, and how do you think Canadian fans are going to be over there? Like, NASL, in terms of live audience, hasn't exactly had the most smashing success. Will they have it in Toronto?
I think there's a ton of gamers in Canada. I mean, from my experience in gaming, there's so many great teams and great players that have come out of Canada. There's a huge scene over there, and it seems like they don't actually have that many live venues over there. So in lieu of their lack of success here in the United States, I think it might be actually a really good move for them to try and set something up in Canada. And I hope that they have a great turnout over there. I don't know how Canadians are going to feel about the North American StarCraft League setting up in Canada, but I mean, I'm sure that's not going to be a deterrent.
You know,
I don't really understand.
Canada's
that.
Still North America, buddy.
They're a part of North America.
Okay, never mind.
Holy shit!
Oh, wow.
I think Canadians are going to blow the fucking roof off that place. I think there's the right mix of foreigners and Koreans there. I think it's one of the first major events. Their WCS is stacked. Huck was even saying he thinks it's harder than the American one. I think a lot of the audience issues that we had in Ontario, California was, you know, it's not like it's completely not NASL's fault. Like, they did some weird advertising, and they could have done more advertising to get more bodies in there. But I think Canada's going to deliver. Like, they've been asking for this for a long time.
They have. They've been asking MLG for a long time.
Yep.
Yeah.
They've been barking up and down the social medias, and you know what? Like, every time there's a test, like a Barcraft, or as Taylor has said, there's just a lot of gamers in general. Like, I really think they're going to come out in droves, and if you take NASL, seasons 1 and 2, their finals, and you inject a good audience there, it's pretty fucking awesome finals. They have great games. They have, you know, good production. But it's trivialized by not having enough people there watching. Like when, you know, someone's walking down a red carpet, but there's a picture of a slightly overweight guy sitting in a chair, just like, and he's the only guy there, and he's not even looking at the person walking down the line. It makes for a funny picture, and that kind of ruins almost the whole experience. So for this time around, for them to, I'm imagining the entire place packed, I think it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, NASL has put on, like, last season was, I only went to last season, but the finals was actually a really, really good show. A lot of their production values and whatnot, I thought were ahead of, or at least a more interesting way to do things than a lot of the other big tournaments, MLG and IPL and whatnot. Basically, they had everything going for them. Player treatment, production, everything. Except for the live audience. Part of that was because it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere in California. Yep. They weren't particularly good at advertising and whatnot. But now, going to Canada, like Jeff said, this is the Canadians' opportunity. They've been asking for a live event for a long time. They have a big, enthusiastic fan base. Just hasn't had the opportunity to come out and support the game yet. And now they're getting that opportunity. Toronto itself, I know it has a huge gaming population. One of the biggest, if not the biggest, barcrafts in the world is in Montreal. You always see the ridiculous crowd shots from there anytime there's an event and whatnot.
That's true. Like,
that's close enough to Toronto that I expect a lot of those fans will come out. Then anyone else in Canada, you know, this is their time because this is the first one in a long time. Anyone who's been saving up and waiting to go to an event, I think it's going to be absolutely huge.
I just noticed on the page I was looking at for the grand finals information that all the premium passes at $50 are sold out.
Yep.
It says that premium pass ticket holders will receive access to the best seats in the house. That's all it says. But general admission is still available for $25, apparently. So I'm really curious to see, you know, how the venue will do. My mom's getting married, so I won't be heading up there. But you guys,
congrats. Good.
You got, yeah, I was like, fuck your mom, dude.
Dane Ayan will be there. I think everyone can agree that Kevin and Ben has done an amazing job all season long, but so has Greetorp and Frodan. I thought they gelled really nicely. And, you know, selfishly, not going to lie, I'm really excited to commentate a lot of games with Greg here. We got a lot of experience, not a lot of experience, but we did some at Masters Cup, and then the few times we get to cast otherwise, we like it. We have fun.
It is lots of fun. This will actually be my first like live event that I'm going to as a caster. I did IEM, but that was just as a fall-in thing after I got knocked out. So this is the first.
Wow,
big...
that's kind of interesting. Like, little fact there.
And that had a relatively small audience and stuff. This, I imagine, is going to be a packed place, being up on stage, casting some of the great matches from NASL. Really, really excited about, you know, experiencing that. And like Jeff said, we love casting together. I think we make a really good duo. It'd be really, really fun to get to bring that to a bigger stage.
I enjoy watching you guys cast, too.
Well, thank you, sir.
I do as well. I look forward to it. I think that's great. Of course, we're actually going to be interviewing Russ tomorrow night on Live on 3. So I hope that you guys will tune in. I'm going to definitely be grilling him a little bit more about the menu, maybe about you know, how many people are actually going to show up. But I've had a chance to work with these guys sort of indirectly for a couple seasons and directly for the Season 2 finals. And I got to tell you, man, like Mark and Russ are great individuals. They take care of all their staff. They care incredibly about the event they do and about the league itself. And I always felt like the one thing that was missing, kind of like Idris said, was that, you know, that bat wing and the potion to make it awesome. And that was kind of the live audience. So, you know, Canada, blow that shit up, man. I look forward to seeing it, even if it's going to be online. So I believe that you can still get your passes. And if I'm not mistaken, did NASL, are they doing, like, specifically an event pass? So even if you aren't a season holder, maybe they're going to have a – I don't know, but
– I'm sure they would. I'm sure they would.
NASL TV might have some information as far as that's concerned. So make sure to head over. But I assume you guys will be there. Pain User, you'll be watching?
Definitely.
There's no suit big enough for me to wear, so I'm not sure what dress code will be doing.
I'm pretty sure it's in jersey.
Suits are rough when you're casting anyway, man. It gets so hot. You got the tie all choked up on your neck and you're talking the whole time. I kind of like the GSL approach that Tastosis have now. I wonder if they actually requested to wear, like, short sleeve. kind of
short
button-ups.
Sleeves.
I found that kind of weird because Nick and Dan were the ones who kind of pioneered the whole suit thing. Like, everyone else was still doing the blazer.
Maybe they're just trying to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
We don't know if it's by choice. Though.
Guys, back to the fun stuff.
I noticed that like they wear pajama pants now.
God.
Yeah.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I'm sure Nick always has.
They've joined the Wheat crew here because I rock my pajama pants. I'm like Mr. Mom over here with the same three pairs of pajama pants. Like,
who doesn't rock pajama pants?
Man, they're comfortable as hell. So
it's like gamer
esports.
I'm in. One day I'll throw a competition. It'll be pajama pants and t-shirts. That'll be the casting attire. It'll be great. Any other comments on NASL? I think we might.
Best of luck. I hope everything goes well. Right. I hope they get a good
brutal. It's gonna be great games. Best of five, single elimination, and they are only paying top four, which is I don't think a lot of people know that. It's gonna get a little controversial, I believe.
Yeah, those first round matches are gonna be pretty intense. I mean, did you just fly all the way over for one match and no money?
Yep.
Of course, that's nothing new if you've competed in NASL again.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It seems to be new every time to the Koreans, though, so it's going to be pretty funny.
And if I'm not mistaken, there's already a rematch from Season 1 in Season 3. Is that right?
I don't know the whole bracket. I'm not entirely
sure. Wasn't Puma versus
Puma
MC the finals of Season 1?
Are they playing
round one?
They play round one.
Some of the first round matches are just ridiculous.
I think the bracket works out that if Hero beats Stefano and Puma beats MC, then we would have a Season 2 finals rematch in one of the semifinals. But you know what? Like, I was actually, guys, I watched, and this is another topic I'd love to talk about when we come back a little bit, or you know, or in general. But watching Evo this weekend, like, it was really hard at some points to leave my computer and come back and just have no fucking idea where they were at in the competition. Like,
yeah,
it's
for
just
sure.
Not a part of the culture to be like, okay, guys, this is the semifinals. Let's bring the brackets up. Like, on the finals day, they had brackets when it got to the point of easy. But, like, when it comes down to people advancing to the top eight the next day, like, that is a part of the story. And so –
yeah. And
I mean, the reason I like this is because it's like already look at this fucking
like
story this
things.
Year, man. You know, it's
when I saw like 50,000 people tuned in, I was like, all right, I'm gonna go check this out. You know, sort of like in between Home Story Cup games when there's a little bit of downtime, I was definitely checking it out. And one thing, fighting games were actually pretty.
Oh my god! What? Hold on, Pages, are you about to say like something amazing, and then your mic just turned off? You're like. Fighting games are.
It's gonna be so
I think he was
going to
say terrible.
Oh, do we just lose him?
No. He's going to say something
God
awesome.
God damn. Damn it. Damn it. God, he was going to.
Needed the shit out of him.
He's going to say something good. I know. Like, for once, guys, he was going to pull something good out, man. It was the Esports Illuminati, man. Pena just got blown up. He's coming back, guys. I'm like really on the edge of my seat. And you know what? Knowing Pena, he's gonna forget what he was about to say.
I was just gonna say, do you think he'd possibly remember? I
don't know. I don't know. He's coming back. Yo, Pena.
Yeah.
Yo. Your cam's not on, but you are back.
Jeff is talking shit about me. I can smell it.
We were talking about whether or not you'd remember what we were talking about.
Yeah, we were talking about Evo for a second.
Okay, keep going. Now you're like, and one thing I realized about the
wait, guys, is Canada in North America? Like,
turn your cam on too.
All right, hold on.
Okay. All right.
All right. There we go.
Good stuff.
So basically. What I was saying about Evo was that I really enjoyed it as a fighting game. I found it really entertaining, but the announcers just don't explain what the hell is going on. They're just like, level 3 turbo X-Factor maximum slam backwards double twisty, and I'm just like, oh, sweet. Like, you know, they needed the tasteless. For those of you who don't know,
You're never going to get that, actually.
Yeah,
you're never going to get that on any level. I mean... You know, the good news is that pain user, I know that you're intelligent enough that you can figure out, like, this guy's beating up this guy.
Obviously.
His bar is gone. And he wins. Yeah.
They never explain any of the game theory.
That
or
actually doesn't bother me that much. You know, like, they aren't explaining to you what a frame trap is or what a reset is or, you know, like, why they don't, you know.
Even little, like, quick explanations for an avid gamer like myself. Like, they don't have to, you know, break it down and interrupt the cast and give me a two-minute diatribe on what's going on.
You
but
know,
even
and,
just, like...
And actually, Yipes pressed me the most this weekend. He's the guy that does Marvel vs. Capcom 3. And Yipes was actually dropping all sorts of crazy fucking knowledge all over the place on the final day. I mean, you're right, but to me, the bigger story is not telling the story. Like, we have so much we can reference back on, and they do too, but we rarely see it. And partially it's just because of how quickly they filter through matches, but it's so hard to tell what's going on. Like, honestly, you can't tune into an MLG Summer, Arena Weekend or Home Story Cup and not just be able to figure out exactly where the fuck you are right now. Whether I'm doing that myself by looking at a wiki, or it's just because our casters are really good at telling the story. And this is true for a lot of other, you know, competitive games as well.
I totally agree with you. Like, the most they got into the story from what I saw is just like, oh, here's Filipino champ, favorite to win the tournament, period. And, like, they didn't plug any of the players' teams. Like, the announcers were calling Complexity Cole the entire time. They were like, oh, and here's our player from Cole. Here's another player from COL. It's like, they have to at least plug the teams and plug, like, the players' Twitters or something like that. Like, they didn't do any of that. They weren't promoting the players. They weren't promoting the stories. And I think that's a really, really big mistake by them because they had a huge opportunity to do that. And you should, honestly.
See, this is a mistake right here. Blink Templar in chat says a story is in the actual game, though. But it's not.
No, it's not.
Like, it is. Part of the story is in the game. But it's actually more about the players, who they've faced, how they've got here, the challenges in getting there. And it's just, like, the surface. Like, the fact that you guys get to go in this weekend and be like, this is a fucking Season 1 rematch right here. And if we go, if these two guys win, it's a Season 2 rematch. Like, that shit's amazing. Like, that shit makes the game even more exciting. Like, fighting games are already hype. Like, fucking imagine if you bring in that aspect to it. Anyway.
No, I agree. That builds up even more hype.
Yeah.
And they could just be like, twitter.com/liquidret all weekend and get that going. They just didn't have anything like that. Like, the behind-the-scenes sort of story of the scene. But anyway, it's fighting games. It's not what we're here to talk about.
No, we're not. Let's take a break. We come back. We're going to open up the phone lines. I don't think there could have been a more awesome response to that. How exciting on a scale of 0 to negative 100 are you, Idra, for the phone?
Oh, I'm at like a 50.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll take a quick break, guys, and we return. We'll open up the phone lines and we'll see if anyone actually has anything good to say. We'll be right back with more Inside the Game after this. Don't go away. All right, guys, welcome back to Inside the Game, episode 46. It is now time to open up the phone lines. Idris' favorite portion of the show. Fortunately for us, we just got a quick glimpse at Hobbs, who looked really cute and seems to be asleep. Are we going to get it again? Oh, guys, there he is. Dude's like, wait a minute, I'm sleeping, man. Hobbs is pretty awesome.
It's pretty cool.
So if you have questions for Hobbs, we're going to be taking them today because maybe we'll get some better questions if we just direct them towards the cat. But we're going to open up the phone lines. You can Skype us at DJ Waiter telephone 909-581-8519. Questions, thoughts about Home Story Cup, about Terrans, about whatever, man. This is the rare opportunity to call in and ask your questions to these guys. So let's take our first one. We got Theo on the line. Hello, Theo. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Okay. Let me just close stream for a sec.
Okay. Thank you, Theo.
Okay. There we go. And let me turn you guys up a bit. So can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you just fine, man. What's your question?
My question is basically, I'm from Europe, and I am in middle top master. I'm playing Zerg, and I was wondering if any of you have a tip for me how I get to the next level.
Make queens and creep tumors.
No. It's not that.
I'm not having
problems on ladder or anything like that. I'm just like the next step to maybe getting my name out there. I'm playing play him every day
doing
what I can. So I practice about 4 to 5 hours a day. I went from Gold League to Masters in 2 months.
Where are you from again?
Denmark.
Europe. Any tournaments by you?
Well, we had Copenhagen Games. So I went to attend to. I met up with some of my friends there. I didn't play because I had some other things to do. So, but I watched a lot of games.
Just play the EU play hems and. You know, like, obviously keep practicing 4 to 5 hours a day, but mix in about an hour or two of custom games with people that are better than you if you can. And if you don't have anyone that's better than you on your friends list or around you, then start messaging people that beat you on the ladder and say, hey, do you mind if I add you and we play? Outside of that, like, when you're eating, watch streams, check out tournaments, just kind of keep yourself informed on the GSL, that kind of thing.
I think, like, the best way to get noticed beyond the level that you're talking about is to actually get good enough to take out, like, a big-name player or potentially a Korean.
I've taken out Boogie, and I've taken out, I believe, I took out, I can't believe, Axelab, I believe it was, in Playhem.
So on a big stage, like Playhem or something like that. But, I mean, beating a player like that on a Playhem is going to get you a little bit of notoriety, but if you beat a notable player at, like, a LAN or in a major qualifier for a big LAN or something like that, I think that's going to bring you a lot more of what you're looking for.
Best of three versus pain user right now. We'll keep taking calls. You guys get that going. Jeff, you look like you agree.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have EU account pain user?
Don't get too excited. No, I don't.
What? I'm gonna play him?
No. Sorry. Aww. Maybe we can arrange it another time.
Wow, you got his hopes up now.
I know. You really did.
I was looking so forward to it.
But no, I think all these guys are right. You just have to kind of like you have to win that next thing. Obviously, streaming helps, especially if you do win. It seems like these guys gain a lot of popularity the moment that player wins competition. Instantly, their stream kind of blows up. Another thing to consider. But good luck, Theo.
Thank you. Yep. Thanks for your time.
Football, man.
You're all great. Great icons and so on.
Thank you. It's kind of like...
Whatever you do, don't do what those guys do whenever, like... I think I've seen it happen to In Control a few times, and it happens to Idra and me sometimes when I'm streaming, is people realize you're streaming, and they're streaming themselves, and then they're like, oh, here's my stream link, twitch.tv, and their name.
I hate that.
For the guys that want to watch the other side, it's like, dude, shameless. Get out of here.
That's why overlays are so good. You just alt tab so it doesn't pop up on the stream. And tell them to fuck themselves.
Yeah.
Greg's very good at being mad.
Very good. All right, let's take a next call. We'll take a phone call. We've got area code 623. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, I had a question for, I guess, everybody.
Okay, fire away.
I was wondering if I guess, Idra or In Control or Pain User, I guess, if you guys ever considered streaming Brood War just for, like, fun.
Have you guys...
watch?
I haven't played it since the OSL qualifiers, like, 2 years ago.
I'm just kind of done with it.
Oh, go ahead, Pain User, sorry.
I was watching the OSL earlier today between Jang B and Zero, and I was thinking to myself, man, it'd be really fun to like play Brood War again and actually get ranked on iCup again. But then I thought to myself, it's such a time sink. You'd be investing so much time in something that is not giving you any benefit. It'd be cool, maybe like to sit down and play with some friends one of these days and.
I would find it too frustrating to be bad at it, and it takes way too much time to be good at it. So,
but thank you for your call, caller. I'm just going to fire through these, man.
Ooh, I think I got a video of the Nurcio hatchery trick thing, if you want me to link
yeah.
you. Week.
Yeah. Yeah, link me. We got area code 304 on the line. Actually, they hung up. They got cold feet. We're going to take area code 515. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Yeah, you. Yeah, man. All right.
Uh-huh.
Hello? Can you hear me now? Okay, he hung up. Fucking dicks. Area code 707, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, what's up? I just want to ask that I was watching, like, the Evo tournament during Home Story, and as a competitive player, I'm, like, high grandmaster on NA and stuff, and I kind of wanted to start going to tournaments more, but, like, with the seeding and how IPL kind of took away their open bracket for the next Vegas, I think I saw. What would you guys think about, like, a tournament where, it's just, like, basically a giant open bracket where there's no seeds or anything, and just everybody comes, kind of like the same structure that Evo had?
It's really bad for tournaments because you'll see a lot of the big-name players who draw the viewership get knocked out in the early rounds.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not going to happen because it's not practical.
And especially the way StarCraft is designed, I feel like it gives an opportunity for a lot of players to just show up to something like that and just be like, oh, I'm just going to cheese the living crap out of, you know, whoever, and be like, I'm just going to take that one win off him. And they'll just do, like, you know, like a back-to-back, like two gateways in base followed by a DT rush or something against Terran. And just, you know, the same applies to every race, but... you'd see a lot of players going out in situations and to players that they really just should not.
I think the closest you'll get to it is MLG, to be honest with you, because it walks that line between what Greg's talking about and what you're talking about, where you're guaranteed to give exposure to those big-name players that are, you know, already qualified through the harder, you know, arena tournament before. And there's also the opportunity for a really cool story like a Scarlet from IPL or somebody else to... as Pain User says, cheese, or just straight up beat someone really good and make a story for themselves. But a tournament that's entirely open bracket suffers from viewership. It's really hard to get the, like, because then you also have to coordinate commentators going into different matches, so there's more of a, like, less professional feel. It affects the production value of the tournament. And, you know, I mean, you can see those kind of issues affecting the tournament and its production, so then it doesn't get as much viewership, and it hurts on a grander scale.
You'll also have a lot of really bad matches as the good players have to slog through the bad players early on in the bracket, unless it's poorly seeded. So then you just have hours of broadcasting that people don't really want to watch that isn't worth watching until you get to the point where you've eliminated most of the lesser players.
I think the number of competitors also has a lot to do with it. You know, obviously, if we were dealing with thousands of players, then things might be a little bit different. Of course, then time constraints in itself. But you're talking about matches that go by definitely a lot quicker. Interesting question. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. All right. Take care. We're going to take Nick's call. Hello, Nick. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Oh, shit. Did I? Oh, okay. Hold on one sec. Hey.
Hey.
Okay. So my question is for Idra. I was wondering, you did really well the first day of Home Story Cup.
Yep.
And then the second day was kind of, like, not as good. But I was wondering, do you feel like you're sort of coming back. Not obviously like super fast or anything like that, but sort of gradually.
Yeah, I'm playing a lot better now. I've had a lot more time to practice and focus on playing the game and stuff, so I'm playing a lot better.
And actually, caller, he did touch on this a little bit at the beginning of the show, so hopefully you'll go back and watch the VOD.
Yeah, I just got back from work.
So. Oh, that's understandable. So there's a little bit more detailed explanation earlier in the show as well. So thank you for your call, Nick.
Thanks.
God damn it. Going to,
I was worried because with all the waffling that he was going to get to a troll. But
going to work, like work's important, missing the first hour of the show, great. He'd already answered that shit. Damn it.
You're on point today, sir.
Sorry, Nick. I don't know, you know, I guess you just kind of got to definitely just move this stuff along. Okay, we're going to take another call. This time we've got Derek on the line. Hello, Derek. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
It's going good, man.
What's up, dude? I'm curious what you guys think about, with the new queen changes and the ability to get creep out, how Hydras could potentially fit into the matchup of ZVT. And Pain User, if you think that'd just be a little bit too BM.
Wait for Heart of the Swarm? I don't know. What? I'm not sure the BM part, but...
Yeah, I don't know. Using Hydras versus Terran is considered, by my one friend anyway, a little bit.
I see. It's probably because you don't just.
I think the most mannered thing you could do right now with the way Terrence is playing matches.
True enough.
Oh, shit.
No, I don't think Hydras have a place right now in TVC, and I don't know if anybody's going to. They're not good against mech, they're not good against bio. And with Zerg's winning by going just Ling and Baneling right now, I don't know why they would.
I think he's, like, attempting to troll me, because on stream, I was playing his friend who had, like, a huge advantage against me, and he started massing Hydras and just ran me over. But I don't care at all.
Damn it. It's not a real question.
Oh. Yeah.
No, I'm actually serious. Like, you've seen people like MKP use, like, a mass medevac style to try to stop it in recent tournaments, so...
He went to
using Hydras to save on
the mass Hydra style that they've never seen.
No, like some Hydras, like a Hydra Link kind of composition that Xenio does versus Protoss.
I'm having trollception right now, man. I thought this was a troll.
This is Xenio.
But then it's actually not a troll, but maybe it still is.
It is.
We're in like the fucking seventh layer of trolling right now, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Well done.
I don't know. I can guarantee you this. Idra, will you ever use Hydras and ZVT?
I don't know. Maybe. You got a bunch of creep and really good production.
When Heart of the Swarm comes out?
If you catch them doing that pure bio style and you're in a really good situation in the macro game, you have a bunch of creep out and you have good production and economy and stuff, that might be a good way to overwhelm them because you have the DPS and you can shoot down medevacs.
Oh, Greg. I appreciate you.
Maybe.
All right. Derek, thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. I need a kick.
He's like
now.
All excited.
I need a kick.
He's like, yes, I did it.
Because actually, like, I don't think
thank
he was
so
trolling,
much.
But somehow through his non-troll,
I'm sure
he got
was.
You to admit to losing to a guy who apparently was trolling you. But
he was
then
definitely
he
trolling.
Knew
I knew
about
he was trolling
because
right
his
off the bat.
Question
I just didn't
B
say
was, I mean, that was well-crafted, Derek. That was
the
real.
Problem is- He's Canadian,
no, I was just going to be honest about it. I'll come out and say it. I definitely lost to Mass Hydras. I lost an early advantage, and then I lost on stream. It's not a big deal.
What were you saying, Jeff?
I was just saying, as a Canadian, it's hard to tell because they come off as so incredibly friendly that you don't even know if it's trolling. He just sounded so nice the whole time that I believed it.
You'd know better if they were from North America. Let's take our next call. We got area code 908. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Thanks for taking my call,
Weep. Yo, thanks for calling. What's up?
I was watching the GSL the other night, man. It was a TVZ on Whirlwind that went to like 40 minutes in the late game. And I noticed that the Terran was just utilizing the sensor tower in a way that I just haven't seen. So I was wondering, you know, particularly in Pain User as being the Terran, do you see that as partially something that the Terran could utilize more often, you know, and maybe in the mid to late game?
What was he doing with the sensor tower that was so amazing? Can you go into a little bit more detail?
Just using it.
Well, I mean, he had it pretty much almost in the center of the map.
Building it.
Or oh, are you talking about the super long macro game between DRG and who was it? Who was the Terran that he was playing against? It went into the late game, and there were like nukes, and he had a forward sensor tower, and they both went to five base.
Yep, they practically mined out the map.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I totally remember that game. And I think it's awesome. It gives you a really good early warning system. Like, if you're on four base, you're either going to need to defend your extended base on the right or your extended base on the left, and it's really easy for a Zerg to, like, feign like they're attacking the one on the right and then switch over to the one on the left, and you have to reposition all your tanks and stuff. So the sensor tower just gives you a great early warning system to know which side he's actually hitting, and you can have your tanks in position. And then I think even later on in the game, he started using the sensor tower for defensive nukes against the Broodlord composition. I thought it was great. And he kept rebuilding it, too. DRG kept killing the sensor tower because he was really frustrated by it, obviously, and he just kept rebuilding it and kept expanding. But I think there definitely needs to be a resurgence in sensor towers, and even forward sensor towers like that, I think, are really, really good, because he never had control over the Zelnaga tower, and the sensor tower was like his own poor man's version of a Zelnaga tower, because he couldn't get control over it, and I really, really liked it.
I mean, I just saw it how, because he had such a, you know, they talk about the Zerg late-game army as being such slow-moving, and he was just being able to keep track of the Broodlords at all time, and I feel practically, or at least partially, it was because of the sensor tower. And DRG, you know, maybe, I think killed him maybe two or three times, but he just kept on rebuilding it in the same location. And I just thought it was a great technique that I rarely had seen, and practically, you know, well, that is a 40-minute game, so I really haven't seen it in that much of a late-game scenario.
Can I actually just spin this question a little bit, like, back to Idra? I mean, as a Zerg player, when you see the sensor tower goes up, you know, what is your mindset? You know, I think some players are like, I've got to kill that. Other players are just like, I really don't give a shit. But how kind of do you react? How does your Zerg brain react to seeing a sensor tower, and what do you do about it?
Well, in the late-game, even in the mid-game, I guess, it depends on how you're playing. If you're playing Middling Bane or an ultra-based late game, in which case you have to be pretty mobile, and you have to be going around and counterattacking and using army movement to pull them out of position, because you don't actually, you're not, well, sometimes you can't win a straight-up fight. You actually have to be applying pressure to them, not just sitting back and waiting like you do with Riddler and Fester. Then you do have to take them out, because it's so powerful for Terran to know where your army is coming from and where you're actually trying to be aggressive. But if you're going Broodlord Infester, which I think is what you should be pretty much aiming for, then you're kind of just sitting back and building up your army anyway, so they aren't nearly as important. But if your opponent's going Ultraling as a Terran, you really need to have those up, because you need to be in a set-up defensive position whenever it comes, and you know that it will be coming, just you have to figure out where and when.
All right. Word.
Thanks,
yeah, thank you very much, man. Appreciate it.
Good question, man. I like it.
Yeah, that was a good question.
Thank you. There you go. Model citizen right there.
I'm glad
right
I had seen the game.
Didn't need a minute. About.
Yep.
That's the cool thing. I do think sensor towers are underused by Terrans, which I'm almost scared to say these days, because if you mention something Terrans aren't using, you get yelled at a whole
Ravens.
Bunch.
Ravens. Use Ravens.
Jesus Christ.
Who was going on about, was it Night End? All Home Story Cup? Like, the Raven is the most OP unit in the game. I'm telling you right now, the Raven is the most OP unit.
People thought I was bad, Marion, when I said he had the voice of an angel, but it's actually true. He has the best voice in all of these.
I love his accent so much.
His accent is, like, even I think my wife, like, would hear it.
It's, like, gentle.
Who is that? Who is that? It's like, why is there a vampire casting Home Story Cup? Like,
I'm
a nice vampire.
Cast constantly. It's like whenever I play, have him cast it.
Greg, you should not be doing this now. Greg.
Why don't you build the Ravens? It's the voice.
So good.
It's the accent with the voice. It's really good. Okay.
Every time everybody started cracking up at him, he's just like, why are you laughing?
Oh, he knows now. Like, the first Home Story Cup, he had no idea, but now he's like, he gets a kick out of it, too.
He embraces it. He's awesome. The nicest, friendliest little guy.
Yeah.
It's like,
that's awesome. All right, let's take another caller. We've got area code 415. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hi. Just with my past experience, it seems like people with autism and Asperger's.
I heard something about a plastic spoon, and then I just didn't
I heard he's got
a plastic spoon and he's got Asperger's. Is that what? Okay.
What if he was like asking a legit question though?
I think he might have been actually. I don't know.
What?
You know what though? Asperger's is like the. It's like
Did he say Asperger's? You know what? Hold on. Just for the whole people watching, that guy's telephone number is 415-596-8171. I'm going to repeat it one more time. I want you to write it down this time. 415-596-8171. Call back till his mom answers and tell him that he's a fucking horrible troll. There you go.
Call back till his mom answers.
Game, set, match.
All right.
Wow, we took the anchor. Touché.
All right. Don't waste my time. Don't waste these guys' time. So let's take our next caller. Let's take this guy's guy. We got Super Nav. Super Nav, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Greetings, gentlemen. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you, man?
Dude? Not too bad. My question. It seems to be that everyone is losing their minds over balance issues these days. Is there really a solution to that? Could there be master? You guys are all really good players. Should Blizzard have you guys play the game out and then make the change? Like, is there a solution?
No. It's almost a cultural thing. It's going to happen all the time.
Yeah, everyone who plays a specific race thinks that their race is underpowered in one way or another. The results can confirm or deny certain, you know, claims that people make about their races, and it's just a constant ongoing battle that Blizzard, balancing a game with three different races and three different completely unique sets of units is a never-ending cycle, just a giant circle.
I think it's happening a little bit less. I think people are whining a little bit less. I'm just saying, very little. And I'm happy about that. Like, as we move forward, there's obviously going to need to be discussions on race. There should be threads. There should be shows to talk about it. But it used to be, like, I couldn't play 10 games without 7 of them being, like, halfway through the games. I'd be like, you know you're a fucking asshole, right? Like, you know, like, you're not going to win any games if you're not Protoss. And I'm like, get out of the game.
Now it's only like that on Europe. So we are making progress.
Yeah.
And right now, it's kind of the thing. It's like to complain about Zerg, and all the Terrans are complaining. And, you know, I think we will figure out new styles of playing the game that sort of compensate for the queen change and the current state of the meta game. And I'm already experimenting with new stuff on ladder just because I don't think conventional styles of play really work right now. So
you just
got to figure stuff out.
It's going to be completely shattered as well, right? When Heart of the Swarm comes out.
Then everything will go to hell and everyone's going to start complaining over again.
Go mech every matchup.
But that's what I mean, though. Like,
just make Vipers.
Damn Skibby. I'm just going to mass those little spider mines and just run them around all over the map.
Dude,
Should there be a way that, say, is thrown out in the public test realm for every patch and then test it out? And
don't
then
anyway?
The actual game.
Pro gamers don't. I think they stopped, but pro gamers don't play that anyway, so it's not really useful.
That's the problem.
But I think that's why they stopped doing it.
That makes sense.
I think what they need to do is really just focus on. I mean, there's certain things that I think that they've patched at the lower levels of play, like, you know, quick foregating and the zealot build times and stuff like that, because at the lower levels of play, people were, you know, losing a lot to stuff like that. But I think they really need to focus on just the highest levels of play, and I think David Kim has said in interviews numerous times that that's kind of what they look at, to an extent. He said, Greg, that said, they do make changes on the lower levels of play, but I think they focus on the highest level of play for, like small tweaks to competitive play. And that's definitely the best sample that they can look at is the best competitive players.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Right. Thank you for your call, SuperNav.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
Hope my question didn't suck. Like the
no,
last
no it's good, man. Thank you.
No, thank you. Appreciate it.
Have a good night.
Yep. Bye-bye. Wait, was that his?
No, that's Abby.
Oh, okay.
She's like, I don't know why she's here anymore.
Freaking out.
Poe isn't barking this episode, yeah. So we have that instead.
Oh.
Abby's the new Poe.
Let's take another call. Let's see. We've got Ryan on the line. Hello, Ryan. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going good, man.
What's up, dude?
My question is a little bit on perception, and without getting attacked from chat sounding like a Blizzard fanboy, sometimes when I watch a show, I notice that you guys are really harsh on Blizzard for, like, I remember a while back you guys said, like, the replay, like, all those features are adding to Battle.net and everything that we were going to have to pay for Heart of the Swarm, and there's all this negativity around it that those features wouldn't be added, but then Blizzard came out and said, no, everyone's getting those features through a patch and get them regardless. And
right.
Where I'm going with
What's
this
your question,
is...
Dustin?
My question is...
I'm just kidding. You're not Dustin Browder.
My question is, we definitely want to hold Blizzard accountable and make sure they're doing the best they can, but sometimes I feel like too much negativity will actually hurt the game and hurt esports if the general kind of perception is that Blizzard doesn't care, Blizzard's not going to try and fix things.
I don't agree with that at all. I think it's just like, more so, if anything, I myself, personally, if I'm super critical of Blizzard or something that they've done, I've been enjoying Blizzard products since original Warcraft. I've logged thousands of hours into all of their games. I know what they're capable of. I know what they've done in the past. I know what kind of changes they've made to games in the past.
He knows what they're doing right now.
Yeah, if anything, I'm just a super hard critic of what they've done. And I certainly think being positive about it is definitely a good thing. In my case, if I've been super critical about Blizzard in anything, it's just that I want them to strive for, you know, the best possible product and strive for excellence. And, you know, sometimes I feel that they do or sometimes I feel that they don't. And, you know, I'll state my opinion.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think any of us would hold an RTS from another company to such high standards because we know what they've done with the StarCraft and Warcraft series before. We know they're capable of putting out just something that dwarfs any other RTS in terms of competitive play and fun and everything else. So we hold them to really high standards, and I think that's acceptable. I think we should call them on stuff that they do wrong, because they've been doing a lot of stuff wrong. And they have the capability to fix them. They can make an incredibly good game. But then there is the point, like, if I go out in an interview and say Blizzard's fucking incompetent and they made a terrible game, and then people in the general public who aren't really into StarCraft 2, who might get into esports but are still on the fence, who aren't really part of the community just yet, hear that, then yeah, that's certainly a turnoff. So I don't know. There's a balance to walk there. Right?
You know,
more often not, it just wins
yeah,
out.
Yeah, that's what I was
I
trying
really
to see if
like
there's that balance. Sometimes a lot of it is the misconception. Like, people say things and everybody will jump on it,
right,
and we find out we're completely wrong.
But hold on one second, right? Because there's a problem. Because these misconceptions are created because there's a lack of communication. Like, my biggest problem is that if there are tools that could better advance StarCraft II in esports and competitive gaming, then fucking A, man. Like, let's get those tools in our hands as quickly as possible. That's where... That's where, to me, the balance is very tough, right? Because you have to have a product, you have to have something that people buy, etc. But at the time, there are so many things that, like, the gamers could use, the broadcasters could use, productions could use, players could use, that would help advance this a little bit. So I think that's where some of my negativity comes from specifically.
And I'll just speak to my own, you know, we're talking about perspective, like, I'm pretty famous for being very critical of them, but I think at the same time, on a state of the game or inside the game, I also talk about, like, you know, they weren't really supporting the competitive scene, but then WCS comes out. Tip of the hat to them. I think that's fucking awesome. I think it's a really cool initiative. A lot of the, you know, the maps that we talked about in past episodes were like, the map pools are shit. All of a sudden, they're incorporating ESV. They're more tournament-centric. They're balancing them a lot better. Tip of the hat to them. We've given them credit for that too. So I think it's more funny and entertaining to make jokes like I'm Dustin Browder and I'm holding a board meeting and talking about the Ripper and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, as long as we don't do what Greg gave as an example, like if I'm in a candid interview where I'm outside of a show, I'm not entertaining, and someone's like, "What's your professional opinion on this?" and I go, "Blizzard's, you know, they're failing. They must be using their money to fund this Titan game, which is the new, you know, World of Warcraft." Then that's spreading misinformation, and that's harmful, and that's bad. But as long as we're critical and we're okay with acknowledging success and giving them credit when they do a good job, then I think that it just acts as a good check and balance, but also like a healthy community. A community should be able to be critical, have fun with it, and still give credit and love when it's due.
I totally agree. with
okay, yeah,
what
that,
Jeff
that's
said.
That's pretty much what I was trying to say. So,
that actually
no,
made me cry
awesome.
A little bit in Control. Like, some fucking music started playing in the background.
But honestly, at the end of the day, I think everybody just needs to be very clear about the fact that, like, all of us love Blizzard and what they've done. I mean, they've provided us with thousands of hours of entertainment and great games over the course yeah. of our lives. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it just needs to be understood that it's from a place of love, and we want to better their products.
The problem,
it's okay for us to be critical.
The problem with that is that there's a boundary to that love. And you know what? If they want an infinite love from me, then fucking Queen's got to break force fields. And I don't know what else I've got to say.
They should have a little mini Queen rocket that shoots out of their back, like the Cerebral Bore from Turok. And it can just, one time a game, it kills a unit by boring into their brain and exploding their head. That would be cool.
Oh, thanks, guys, for the...
Ghost EMP range needs
thanks,
to be...
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
What? Fucking Turok, man?
It,
like,
yeah, like... Turok's fucking skirt. The little queen shoots out of its ass, and it just lands on somebody, burrows into their brain, and then blows their head up. It'd be so cool.
Turok was the shit in the game.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, God. All right.
It's a great game.
All right. Whew. Okay.
Reminds me of, like, Killer Instinct.
Take one more call before we get Goatlust on the line. We got area code 616. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, Inside the Game.
Hello.
I kind of want to piggyback on some of the balance questions that we've been getting, just perhaps maybe to put it into it.
Okay.
Just, I'm curious, just from all of you guys, what would be the time frame, as far as everyone's kind of QQing right now about Terran being underpowered, what would be the time frame as far as when, I guess, like, Idrin and Control, who are making some pretty good points about it, that Terran players need to just figure out all the new timings in the build, how long would you give them to do that before you would then come back and say, okay, maybe this is actually something we need to look at?
How long did Terran spend everything for?
I mean, I think my answer would be, like, you know what? I would never tell Terran players, Let me try to word this correctly. If I have said this in the past incorrect, what I would say now is certainly everyone should discuss what they think is an imbalance. Certainly everyone should discuss what they think is a problem. But I guess I just get a bit annoyed. And I was one of these guys in the past, so take it for what it is, because I was certainly in the wrong. But it just gets too bad when people are like, well, I lost all motivation. I'm not really playing, and you know, I don't care. It's just completely broken. Like, I played StarCraft a very long time, and there was definitely maps, there's mashups, and there's been patches where things are imbalanced, things are broken, but if you want to stick it out, and if you have the passion, then just discuss it and keep playing and talk about it. I don't think there's a time frame for when you should quit StarCraft 2 because a matchup gets too hard, you know, like, and it's not like we can, like, sign this petition for Blizzard to change the Queen back or give Ghosts more damage on their snipe. Like, it's just not going to happen. So play the game. Don't look too sensationalist. And you can join me in my journey because I'm trying to do that more and be better about it as well.
Is it a good time when these types of things happen to maybe say, hey, I'm going to go explore this race? And maybe, you know...
I think playing a little of the other race can help, definitely, because it gives you a new perspective on things. Like, I know there's a lot of little timings that Terrans don't feel exist versus some of the Zerg builds, and then if you play Zerg, you play that build, you realize where the weaknesses actually are in it, and then from the Terran perspective, it's just down to figuring out what build's actually happening. So that can give you new ideas on how to approach.
A lot of Koreans play off races, and it's not because they're dicking around, it's because they want to test out and see the other timings, you know?
Go ahead. Do you have another question?
It's one question per call, right?
Well,
not necessarily.
You have actually done so well that you've been awarded another, my friend.
I've been awarded another question?
You've been awarded another one.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, of course.
I guess then I'll keep it short, then I'll just make a small little comment. You guys said you didn't like the... when you're on ladder and players tweet out their message out their streams. I don't know. As someone who watches a lot of streams, I find that pretty nice. Just when no name GM guy who's got like 10 viewers streaming messages his stream, just because I mean, I have two monitors. I love watching that.
When they go like, "Hey, do you mind if I chat or post my stream. It's like, yeah, that's fine. It's a nice common courtesy. But when the guy goes, yo, bitches, stop watching this terrible stream and start checking out mine, it's annoying. Obviously, like, the funny thing, too, is I'd love for a team of scientists to do the research on, like, how many people go, oh, shit, there's another stream that I wasn't aware of. And open it up and go, whoa, this one's way better than the others.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, that's something that's been happening forever, too. Like, in the dawn of when we were streaming on sites that weren't gaming-oriented, you'd have people come in and be like, yo, man, come watch me wax my jet ski. And it's like, well, fucking no. Like, I never understood that, actually. I mean, it is different when it's definitely your advertising to other StarCraft watchers, but
and it's like man. It's like have a little bit of, you know, dignity. It's like get good, stream a lot, be cool about it, and people will start watching your stream. It's not like you need to hop on other people's streams and blast your stream everywhere every time you play a game against anyone good.
There's
I agree.
Have no viewership, so I don't mind people trying stuff. I just think you need to be polite about it all.
I would agree.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair point. Yeah, I bring it up mostly just because that's how I've discovered some pretty good, like, kind of relatively unknown commentator streams that I found. So that's why I guess. I'll stop taking you guys' time now and let you get some other calls.
Thank you,
guys are awesome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye. All right, guys. Now, check this out, man. There's actually two Goatlusts calling me right now. The funny thing is that one Goatlust is already on my list. It's like, I see the chats. I already know that's the real Goatlust. But
take the fake one.
I kind of want to take the fake one just to see what the fuck he's going to say. So
if it's over-the-top Australian, it could be worth it.
I mean, he's already listening, but let's try to... I'm gonna open it up like it's Goatlust. So here we go. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's finally time for that segment of the show where we bring Goatlust on Inside the Game. Hello, Goatlust. What is up, buddy?
Damn it.
Oh, God damn it.
God, like, he can't even do a fucking...
The potential was there.
Gadane fate. Like,
you should have just done it without saying anything.
God, he...
He just set you up perfectly.
Like, you wasted a perfectly good Skype account. He's still on. He's like... What? He's like, oh, fuck, I forgot. You know what? Can we just have this, like, take this moment? Even if you're going to troll the show, maybe you're going to call in the show legitimately. I want to actually show everyone here a little trick. Like, you guys might even know, right? So if you go to Skype and in the search bar you type in Echo, then there's actually a Skype test call. And, like, we're going to demonstrate right now. Like, we can call this person, and it's this woman.
Hello, welcome to Skype call testing service.
And she's
after the beep,
welcoming us.
Please
she's very
message.
Welcoming.
Afterwards,
she's nice.
Your message will be played
and
back to you.
There you go. You talk into it, and it, you blah, 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 and it's recording you back. And this actually will help you not call up and look like a fucking jackass.
Oh, you talk into
See?
It?
See? Look at that. It's like, oh, my mic blah, works. Blah, blah. Now I'm going to call inside the game and troll. Fucking get with the program, people. Jesus. All right. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the real.
The real.
Often imitated, never duplicated. It's the real Goatlust. Hello, brother. What is up?
Oh, yeah, not a whole lot, mate. What's up, fellas?
Not much, man.
What's up, Goatlust?
Not much.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
How are things going over there, man? I understand.
Oh, fucking cold a bit.
Oh, cold. I have a question.
Cold for us.
It sounds like the Blizzard World Championship in isn't there? There's one in Australia somewhere, New Zealand or something, like
Sydney, I believe.
Is it Sydney? Oh, that's away from you, isn't it?
Well, probably 10-hour drive or something. Yeah.
Oh, God, that's a long ways. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
I just wondered. You know, you seem to be into StarCraft and stuff. Like, if you'd go to something like that.
Oh, well, yeah, I'd try to if there were some big names there and shit, but, yeah, I don't know. I'm not too much into the
what are you saying about
the Aussie scene.
Yeah, what are you saying about your own scene, man? That's kind of...
they got Mingled, and...
Yeah,
I don't even know
what
it still plays. I haven't seen anything.
I'm going to be honest, I'm not real into it.
Who else? There's, like, Pinder, Legionnaire.
T-Gun, man. T-Gun, baby.
Vegan.
Oh, and they have, I actually know a few that are pretty cool. They've got Mafia, Iegez or something like that, a Terran player. I don't know how to say his name.
Oh, yeah.
He's good.
He went to IAM China.
They have a good squad of guys. Like, it would make for a good, 16-man term or something like that. I'm not even trolling. They have good players. These are WCSs good. Are awesome.
Indeed. They're pretty cool. You get to see a lot of...
The fuck's your question?
Whoa, hey.
So I was going to ask, seeing as you guys, a couple of you fellas have just been over in Europe, I wanted to ask, is there anything like, are there any real big things that jump out at you that that the three sort of big scenes do quite differently from each other, Europe, NA, and Korea? Are there any big things that jump out at you?
You mean about European specifically?
Gameplay?
Well,
Europe
or Korea or any of them. Are there any things that you're just like, this doesn't happen in the other two?
Okay. I think this can go everywhere, and that's good because we always give GoatLess a lot of time, so we can talk about this. I have a few things. Warcraft 3 players complain more than StarCraft players.
Yep.
Okay. That's not necessarily European or North American, but that's interesting. Take note of that. Think about it.
Yeah.
European players will check build orders and look at results more than North American players. They will do homework on the build orders of their opponents more than North American players will. And that actually does a lot for them. Europeans, when they tease each other, it's always in jest, but nothing is sacred. Like, if you're a bigger guy, they'll call you fat. If you just lost in a tournament, they'll make fun of you for that. If you've got bad mechanics, they'll make fun of that. Like, every time I watch Goody at one of these tournaments, I feel like it's like a behind the scenes story about like a bully documentary or something like that. Like, the guy gets so much shit put on him, but he actually just laughs it off and has a good time and just kind of goes, yeah, whatever. And I just realize that's what they do. And Goody's not my only example. It's just like, that's how they interact. European fans are very different from North American fans. North American fans will almost like not make eye contact and kind of give you more space because they don't want to impose and they don't want to encroach. European fans will close the space. They'll close it down. And they like assume more of a relationship. And this is not good or bad. There's no criticism here. It's just different. It's just very different. I'm spitballing. I'll think about some more, but Greg, pain user?
I know, you covered a lot of them. In terms of playstyle, it feels like every European player has like their own unique little, very cutthroat, kind of abusive builds, much more so than Americans, and much less standardized than Koreans. Koreans obviously very aggressive, and they have plenty of abusive builds as well. But it's like one Korean finds what the entire community then decides is the best build, and then they all start doing it. Europeans much more unique when it comes to stuff like that. In terms of play style.
The order of prudeness, okay? North Americans, very fucking prude. Very, like, I noticed, if someone's watching a movie and, like, a girl's shirt comes off, they're like, oh, shit. And they'll, like, hold their iPad against them and, like, like, oh, God. Europeans, don't give a shit. Here it is. Check out those boobs. Totally fine. Sometimes they'll grab a little bit of balls. They're okay with that. European players will touch each other. I've seen Sock and Haswaps do what I felt like was the opening scene to like Cruel Intentions. I thought something was going to happen there. I thought I was going to bear witness to a true Archon in real life. Koreans, though, okay? So it's like North Americans, very prude. Europeans, not that prude at all. Then there's Koreans. Okay, Koreans... Has anyone ever seen a litter of kittens? Kittens interact. Sometimes they lick each other's balls. Time to just kind of move around. Koreans actually are they take whatever boundaries, any kind of personal distance. I've seen Leonok dry hump somebody, man. It's these two eyes. Seen it happen. Now the really funny part about this, what I like about this a lot. Is the North American players, okay, once again, really prude, when they're around Korean players for an extended period of time, to fit in.
They Right.
They awkwardly try to touch them just as much as they're being touched. They see they're being touched. Funniest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. Because if you're not comfortable holding another man's hand, then it looks really painful. It looks like you're like...
Oh my god, this is like the best question ever because it's so true. It's so fucking true, man.
Greg has stories, man. Yeah. Greg, are you comfortable?
Some of them. In, like, the Korean team houses, they'll lay there, like, in each other's crotches. Like, one will lay like this with their legs splayed, and the other one will lay in there, like, while they watch a movie. Just everyone's, actually, like a pile of kittens, just everyone laying on top of each other while they sit there watching a movie. It's, like, absolutely not gay at all. In fact, it's because being gay is, like, not acceptable. From what I understand, being gay is not acceptable in their culture. So it's just, like, any interaction between two guys has to be purely friendly. It's, like, unimaginable for it to actually be sexual at all. So it's completely fine. And they like it.
They like it.
Aren't there also stories of, like, homosexuality in team houses, though, as, like, a result of that sort of...
Oh, no. That's...
Oh my god.
They're like posts on Team Liquid.
Because all those guys know exactly what's going on in there.
Very different.
Very different. It's training. Okay.
It's training.
Koreans, like, it's romanticized that they have this insane work ethic, and I think that's absolutely mostly true. Like, you'll play the Korean ladder, and there'll be a couple guys who, 2 weeks into the season, you play them and you check their stats, and it's like 765 and 821. And you're like, how is that fucking physically possible? How did you just do that? But he just keeps playing. Those are the guys that then die, though, like later at the computer.
Some of the chat comments are fucking hilarious right now.
Yeah. I'm watching it.
Give us
no wonder Huck wanted to go to Korea. That's one of my favorites right there.
He's actually by far the most comfortable with all that. I mean, are you listening? Okay. Don't worry about it.
You know what I also like, just as an observation? I like when Westerners go to Korea and you can see certain parts of them transform. A very easy one, just to kind of give you guys a little tidbit. I'm not going to throw out everybody. But look at Wolf's hair. Like, just document the transformation from when Wolf went there. And if someone could make a screen capture of, like, his hair, you know, almost month by month as he's been in Korea, we're, like, six seasons away from Super Saiyan, man. It's actually going to fucking happen. Like, his head's going to explode into yellow. It's going to be awesome.
They should make a montage of Artosis mannerisms slowly conforming. The Artosis laugh.
Yeah, that's right. Wolf isn't becoming Korean, he's becoming Artosis.
Yeah. Which is interesting, because actually, Artosis has come full circle. Like, he went there like a grubby bastard, just normal pride of the Northeast, and then he hits Korea, and his hair went, like, feathered, and, like, there's the mohawk for a while and stuff. But he's actually such a super fucking good commentator now that he doesn't even have to do pretty hair, so it's just kind of normal... cover up the balding Artosis hair, and it's just fine. There's some other good European differences, though, that I really liked. I wish I had a week to prepare. I could have performed better with
are
this.
Are you gonna? Would it have graphs, and would it use the abacus?
The abacus.
The pocket abacus is always nearby.
Greg, can you think of any others, like, differences between North America and Europeans?
The fans are a lot more awkward. I don't. Maybe it's just cultural standards, but European fans, they're pretty awkward. But I don't know. I'm not sure about stuff like that because I've dealt with a lot of cultures over a long period of time.
I don't think. Did I tell the stories about DreamHack on this show?
I'm not sure which stories.
I can't remember, but like, I was super tired, as DJ Wheat can attest to. We casted for like 12 hours each day, and I had a fan like present two hands to me, and he's like, choose one of these hands and you'll be awarded a prize in either one. And he like just walked to me and did this, and I was like, dude, I'm so fucking tired. And he's like, choose one of these hands and you'll be awarded a prize. And I was like, I don't want to be rude and I don't want to be on the front page of Reddit, but like, please stop, you know. If you have something for me, I'd totally appreciate it. If you don't, please don't. And he's like, okay. And he opens his hand, it's a condom, and he's like, will you take this condom? And I was like, thank you. No.
That was it?
Yeah, that's it. And they just walked away.
See, well, this was like not necessarily a fan story, but just to like to give you a general idea is that keep in mind DreamHack is fucking crazy, right? So like anything that could possibly happen probably does. And we're over in the Logitech stage. Jeff, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like inside where all the exhibitors were. And I was just around the corner, which like you go around the corner, there's like 3,000 dudes playing, you know, on their PCs. And this guy in a French maid outfit walks up to me and he's got a feather duster. He's like, I think I know someone who's been a bad boy and needs to get clean, you know. And so I'm like, hold that thought. I'm actually okay, but come over here. I've got a friend that needs that cleaning that you're talking about. We ground the corner. I'm like, see that guy right there? The short hair? That's the scrawny looking one? And I'm pointing to Apollo. I'm like, that guy's real dirty. And this guy just like runs over there. He didn't even like think twice about who I was pointing him to. And was like, I understand you've been a bad boy and you need some clean. That's pretty much what I think every European fan is like. It, you know, just that's how I picture them. French maid outfits, trying to clean dirty people. And Apollo did not like it. He was like, what? I'm trying to do my studies here. Don't you see I have my notebook?
My notebook.
Difference between Swedes and Germans, although sometimes Germans won't live up to this. Swedes, when together, will randomly break into speaking Swedish in front of people that don't speak Swedish, which, as an American, I don't have a lot of perspective on this, because if I spoke five different languages, I don't know how I'd act. But I always found it really funny, because I'd be standing with four other Swedes, and we'd be talking, and then one would be like, and they'd just be like, ah, and they'd start talking in Swedish. And it's one of those things where I can sit there and smile and look at them kind of randomly, like, you know, like...
I think we asked Sorzan about it, and he said they do that when they're talking about stuff that, like, we wouldn't care about.
Yeah,
it's kind of funny, though.
It's all really, the secret, you know, Swedish Illuminati, yeah, where they're like, what a fucking idiot this guy is. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah.
I don't know what to do with my eyes when people are speaking a different language, though, because I obviously don't know what the hell they're saying.
It's what? Just like, be an active listener and not along like you understand it all.
Perfect. Yeah.
And make active noises and stuff.
Pull out your abacus next time and just start flicking beads. Be like, I see.
Yeah.
All right, go last.
Germans are pretty good about it. They're pretty good about speaking English in front of you, even when they're not talking to you, but just like out of courtesy.
Yeah.
But then this whole weekend, like, I would be walking back with Hasuabs and Monchi, and we're all having a great conversation. Then they just bust into angry German, and I'm like, got nothing here. So what I start saying is just Guten Tag and Scheiße, like, repetitively. It's all the German I know.
Scheiße.
Scheiße.
They couldn't get the proper anger across in English, eh?
Exactly.
No, I don't think so.
Exactly.
That's a great question, though, man. There's so many. I could write a book on this.
Maybe one day we'll find out what's so crazy about you Aussies.
Yeah, well, judging by some of the weird shit that happens around the world, maybe I'd better start supporting the Aussie scene a bit more.
You better, man. You better. All right. Sir, yeah. Thank you, as always.
All right, yep. Thanks, as always, gents.
Peace. Bye-bye.
Peace.
He said peace back.
Das ist German.
Yeah, das ist gut.
That was a big hit. I was requested to do that many a time.
Do what?
My German porn voice.
Was? All right.
Yeah, das ist, and I'll tell you what, it's like the easiest laugh out of German people because they actually dub all their English movies with that voice. That's the voice I'm making fun of. Like, you can go see a Pixar movie, but it's with a German porn voice for everything. It's so awesome.
All right, let's wrap up. And Jeff, you're going to have to do yours in the German porn voice. We're going to start with Pain User. Pain User.
Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thanks to my fans, those who like me. And shout out to my team, Check 6, and our sponsors, TT Esports, Rush Order Tees, and Gamer Uniform.
But who is that? Oh, that was Zombie again. All right, Greg.
Thank you to everyone who likes me. Also, Team Evil Geniuses. All our sponsors, Intel, Monster, SteelSeries, Kingston HyperX, Beyond Gaming, Sapphire. I'm very proud of myself because I remembered Monster and SteelSeries order that time.
Well done.
Also, check us out at evilgeniuses.net. All the other sponsors are over there. I actually have too many to list, which is really cool. And then thank you to everyone who watched.
All right, and finally, EGA Control. All
right. This is going to be hard, because usually my accent's like, if I do it for too long, it becomes something else.
I know, that's the great part about
it. It all becomes Scottish.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, well, I mean, much... No, see, I fucking can't do it. I'll work on it. I'll work
do
on
it in the Native American accent. That one hasn't been around too long.
I can do that one forever.
There, yes. That's my favorite.
It is at this time that I want to make most...